All right, just started. Just to note, Graham's audio dropped out a few times, so I'll keep an ear on that to hear. It may have just been noise in the room, but hopefully you're okay.
Yeah, let me know if
Yeah.
you can't hear me.
You might
Yeah.
just need to move the microphone a little closer to Graham.
Martin, do you want to just move the phone down? That's fine. Just outside the room. Yeah. Okay. Good. So we'll start proceeding. Just a question for Steve Jarvis. How long have you got, Steve?
Sorry, I need to be away by 7:20.
Right, okay. Well, we'll just do apologies for absence and the minutes of the last. We'll move on to you. Okay. So apologies for absence. There's just David Sims, who's old or flu. Other than that, we're all here and we're all in the room. Interests. I think there will be some interests over planning matters, but I'm not aware of any other interests unless anyone wants to read.
So
Yes,
I'll go first.
Lord?
Yeah, the application in respect of Five Philosopher's Gate. The applicant is known to me socially quite well. Also, if he comes to make representations on item 88.3, I will withdraw as well for the same reason, that's assuming any discussion takes place.
Okay. Thank you. Minutes. Has everyone seen the minutes of the last meeting? Are there any comments concerning those minutes, or are we not happy?
Those they accept.
Okay. Anyone to second? All in favour?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Right, public issues and public participation. We'll start with you, Steve, as you've got a time.
Okay, thanks very much. In terms of what I've got to update, as I think some of you are aware, the County Council's rights of way officers have concluded that they don't think there is sufficient evidence to introduce a traffic regulation order on the Ruddery, essentially on the grounds that they don't believe there is either sufficient damage to the surface or sufficient danger to the users of it. That's clearly unfortunate. I mean, they do leave the door open somewhat in that they say that if the proposed development were to go ahead, that might change circumstances. They also raise the issue that, and one of the things that was raised originally was why the 20 mile an hour limit stops at the end of the surface road and whether or not that should be included as part of the 20 limit. That's something we need to explore. I mean, the traffic regulation order actually says Ashwell Street. It doesn't specify any ending point. We may have, or I may have to negotiate a difference of opinion between rights of way and highways about that, but that's something that I think we could do relatively well. We ought to be able to do relatively easily. That may not turn out to be the case. There's also the potential as to whether or not we should sign it differently. I have to say I'm a bit skeptical that that will have a major impact, but it probably wouldn't do any harm. I think if we decided to have another go at some time in the future, I think that it would be necessary to do rather more in the way of gathering quantitative data about the usage of it. I think looking back over the boats that have got traffic regulation orders on, they are predominantly ones where there was a lot of surface damage because they were essentially unmetalled. They didn't have a gravel surface. They were mud, and there'd been significant surface damage. So I think that's probably why they were prepared to accept those, but not the Ruddery. But I think it's a pity, but there isn't an appeal process, but we can have another go at some time in the future if we feel circumstances warrant it, and certainly investigate. signs and 20 mile an hour limits.
Certainly there are, Steve, on the surface damage, there are a couple of areas which they didn't show in the photographs where they are regularly very badly pitted.
They are, yes, I know. They're nothing like as bad as the Clotherwell 16 boat, though, which had ruts a foot deep in places. So I can see the distinction from rights of way point of view between what was essentially a muddy track and one that's got a fair amount of hardcore and other material on it. So I think that's probably why part of why they came to a different conclusion. But one of the things we need to keep doing is fetch him along to repair it, because rights of way will repair damage. I'm not sure they've done that bit recently, but they've certainly done the other end up by Partridge Hill, and they've certainly done the end down by the tennis club. So getting them along to fix the defects is something that will encourage them to believe that it gets a lot of use that we can't otherwise demonstrate. So I think that's where we are with that. I have, following the highways meeting, I have investigated the painting of street lamp columns, and the county council has confirmed that it will not pay for the painting of street lamp columns. So we are down to what funding there might be in highways, their county budgets or anywhere else. I don't say they can't be painted, they're military, they won't pay for it out of the central budget. And I think their position is that where streetlights deteriorate as a result of that, they replace the column, which may or may not be sensible thing to do. What else came up? The planters at the junction by the War Memorial. I think Jane had a set of pictures of some planters that are believed to be available, and I think probably tonight you're being asked to decide whether or not you think they're acceptable. I think if they are, then I think it might be quite a quick job to get those put into place. If the feeling is that something different is required, then it may take a little longer, because I think these ones are essentially free. So we'd have to find some funding from somewhere, which would certainly take longer. I think that's probably all I had to say.
There was some discussion about speeding along Lucas Lane. And down Newnham Hill, and there was some discussion about platforms and rather than speed humps and things like that you were looking to.
I think particularly in Newnham Way, it's difficult to imagine that anything other than one or more humps would have a significant impact on speed. So that's something that we would need to look at. I mean, the speed and volume measurements indicated that there clearly is a problem in terms of compliance with the 30 limit there. I know the police have looked at doing some enforcement, but that'll clearly be intermittent at best. So I think in terms of engineering solutions, you would probably need a couple of humps. And that's something we need to get a proper investigation done on. I think Lucas Lane in some respects is a bit more difficult, because there's already quite a lot of mobile traffic calming in terms of parked cars a lot of the time. So I suspect once again, humps would be the only solution that would really have any impact. But one of the problems there is, of course, that on one side of the road there are houses very close to the road, and I think we'd have to establish what the views of the residents were, and I fear that we might find they were pretty divided on that. But I think Newnham Way is easier because the houses are well set back from the road.
I mean, it's clearly, Lucas Lane is clearly a different situation from Newnham Way. And I think Newnham Way. But let me open up to other people that want to sort of ask you questions about what you've said to date. Dave, Martin.
Two things. Obviously, Newnham Hill I'd be quite interested in, and we will be coincide, they would be talking to us what they're going to do before they do it.
Oh, yeah.
And the second thing is, having organised the speak loop for many years, when are they going to start again? I mean, it's about 6 months now.
I think Tom is handling that, so we'll ask Tom to
advise
on that. I didn't quite catch what Martin said.
The camera, speed camera.
I used to run it for many years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes, yes. That we'll come back to that. David Cook, you've got your hand raised. You've got some points.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I'm celebrating that I managed to work out how to do that, because I'm not very good with technology. I think I just wanted to address the question of the ruddery and say just two or three things about that, if I may, quickly. Firstly, in terms of the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit sign, if, but only if, it would be helpful to Councillor Jarvis. I am part of the off-roading community that uses the ruddery, and I have said previously publicly that I think it should have a 20-mile-an-hour limit on it, it being an urban green lane, an urban boat. If it would help Councillor Jarvis, I'd be very happy to write to him formally explaining why I think that, and reminding anyone and everyone that you know, the code of good conduct, which good riders follow, does suggest 20 miles an hour is as much as you should maximum speed in areas like that. It's an offer, it's not a suggestion. If it helps, then I'll do it, and if it's irrelevant, then I won't.
To be honest, I don't know what extent it will help, but why don't you write to me, and it certainly won't do any harm. Hopefully it won't waste your time, but hopefully it won't waste very much of your time, even if it doesn't have any effect. But I think it can only be helpful to some extent.
Okay, thank you for that, sir. The second was, I think...
Go on, David.
Sorry, Chair, should I continue?
Yeah.
Thank you. The second is that I think part of the issue here and the difficulty was that it was very unfortunate that a parishioner had a fall and broke their arm. Very unfortunate. Myself and two of my friends, who were both police officers with advanced motor training, as am myself, were the first people on the scene. And I did say, when this was being discussed before, there was no road traffic incident, there was a fall. And I think it's to the great credit of the parishioner that she wrote an email to confirm that was the case. It might have been inconvenient in terms of the ambitions regarding the ruddery that were held in some quarters, but I think I would admire and want to record that admiration for her for actually clarifying in such a clear way that that was the situation. The third point I'd want to make is that I ride a lot of green lanes in the locality, and although the ruddery might look like it's not in a good state, I should tell you that it is in a massively better state than almost any of the other green lanes in the locality that I know. And so in terms of the rights of way officers looking at that, it's probably about one of the best examples of a green lane that there is in and around. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you.
Can I just say the 20-mile-an-hour limit is only useful if there's frequent checking on speed?
Yeah, yeah.
Without it, you might as well have a...
Yeah, well, I think Steve is slightly apprehensive as to how much of an improvement it might make. Yeah.
I think the issue is that it clearly sends the wrong message, having a 30-mile-an-hour sign.
Absolutely.
In that location.
Absolutely.
More recent 20-mile-an-hour implementations, they have been more careful to avoid doing that sort of thing. So we may manage to get it moved on that basis.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Steve. Any other comments or questions from parish councillors or the public? Is that it, Steve, from your side, or was there anything else?
No, I think we have covered everything that was on my list. And my apologies for not being able to be with you in person and for having to leave so early. Next month, I shall be with you.
Okay.
Just 88.1.3, what we have, Steve, here. The Townsend Meadow Trees.
Yeah. Can you comment on the Townsend Meadow Tree?
I don't think I've got anything to add. I think the belief is that it is not on the highway land. That's the highway's view.
Yeah. Well, I've got a point to actually refer back to Ian, in that where we've got to now is that the belief is that it is land that is should be under the management. Have a map.
Graham, we keep losing the sound.
Sorry. If Ian has got a map, as he is a resident of Townsend Meadow, a map from showing the management committee's area of responsibility, then could he make that available? Because that may well show, confirm the point that it is believed to be the responsibility of the management.
So my understanding from discussing this with the homeowner in question, that they have a document from the time the planning consent was originally drafted, where it shows the tree as a part of the hedge forming the boundary. They were told by the developers that this tree belonged to the highways and was a part of the highways land. There is no common land as such as part of the management company. There is only the roadway itself.
Presumably the developer will be able to substantiate that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tom's got a point to make on that.
Yeah, I spent some time poring over the original application and the plans for that. I mean, the site location plan, the red line, which is the delineation of the application site, which is typical. Boundary is clearly inside the hedge, and therefore the tree and the hedge are not part of the, not within the curtilage of the properties on the boundary, the station roadside of Townsend Meadow.
I've seen that same diagram, which I could circulate if it's helpful.
Well, it sounds like that evidence would point to it being highway. So it's either highways or it's a no man's land belonging to no one.
Well, it belongs to the applicant, to the developer, because the application site is the application site, but it doesn't have to be the same boundary as the actual land that the developer
purchased. It's the land under management. So if it's not under management, it's not highways, it's still technically owned by the developer, then, is what you're saying. Right. That may be where we are then.
I think that may be the position, and that may be a problem. One of the issues is, of course, that the scale of all the plans can make it rather difficult to determine where something is. You know, the red line is drawn on the plan is probably almost as thick as the tree trunk. So those are some of the difficulties, I think. At the moment, highway's view is clearly that it is not on the highway.
Regardless of the ownership, in terms of the health of the tree, the homeowner did pay to have a professional inspection when they moved in some 6 months ago, who declared the tree was, in that time, fit and not in any danger of falling. And considering the recent discussion, they plan to have that assessment redone, again, by a professional. I should say they make no claim that they own the tree. They believe it to be owned by the council as it stands, but regardless, for their own understanding, they would like to have it assessed.
Well, I guess this has all come around because of a complaint by a concerned homeowner And I think that can be reported back to that homeowner direct matter of responsibility of the parish council.
Yeah. Your sound is disappearing intermittently. I don't know. David's nodding. I think he's having the same issue. I'm afraid I need to go now. But people may not be able to hear everything you say.
So I'd recommend, I mean, I can hear all the other councillors. I'd recommend just moving the microphone closer to Graham Graham, you may need to move your screen because it could be blocking the path to the microphone.
Right. Okay.
I'm just going now, I'm afraid.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Thank you. Right. Having dealt with Steve's comments, I think we should probably move to Tom, so we have continuity of councillor input, and then we'll suspend standing orders for members of the public and take matters that anyone has to raise there. So, Tom, do you want to come closer?
So first of all, just to follow up on what Ian was saying about the ash tree, I had a similar conversation with the resident at number, I think it's right.
Nine.
This is number nine, so yeah. Plot one, but yeah. Number nine. They were very sort of forthcoming about having done what they could to try and maintain the health of the tree. You mentioned they had it inspected professionally and would do so again. And were also of the opinion that that was not really on their land, but their responsibility, but they were doing it. So is it an issue for planning enforcement? I don't know, is the answer. I mean, I can ask, but I can't promise that there'll be people rushing out from the planning department to inspect the tree and have work conducted on it on behalf of the landowner. The other element of this, of course, is that we've had not the sort of easiest experiences with that particular developer over the past in terms of getting conditions met and jobs done that need to be done. So, but we can only try. So,
we surely won't get anywhere until the local person comes out and says it is easy or is it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they say it's not their land, then we're back to square one again.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if there is a risk of the tree falling onto the house belonging to number nine, then and it's not anyone else's, any other organisation's clear responsibility, then we'd expect them to do what is necessary to protect their property.
I mean, they're at liberty to remove any overhanging branches that open into the property anyway, aren't they? They're supposed to contact the owner and ask permission. But if the owner can't be located, seem that they can go ahead.
I was slightly confused because when that land was sold, it was only sold about 4 or 5 years ago to the developer, there would have been an entry in the land registry and there would have been a digital plan that would have been appended to that transaction. And then when the underlying individual plot owners bought their plots again, there would have been a land registry plan which would have had to divide the lots. And they should be digital, up-to-date stuff rather than ancient parchments from 1066.
Sadly, not there.
Exactly, the parchments from 1066.
And if the land registry is also not done, despite us having lived there more than 18 months, they've still not done the work to add it to the registry. So, because there's a backlog, we call it.
Sorry. Fair enough.
They haven't even reviewed the plan yet, and said whether they're acceptable or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's my solution called down there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it does seem to be heading towards a bit of an impasse.
So you'll go for it then? We have to wait as long as we have to wait.
Well, I'm happy to get someone to make contact with the developer.
Fine.
I tried to get it today. They've got a website which I can't access because it hasn't got a certificate. Coming through all that. So, and therefore I can't find an email address. So all that is a phone number and an address. So
I can help you with the email address.
If you could send me that, get some sort of response. Okay, that was that. The second thing was, I think Graham probably wants to talk about this as well, which was the urban civic consultation over last week, which was, I think, very well attended and quite interesting. And so what they've got now is what they called their preferred option consultation, and this is open until December 15th for members of the public and others who would like to do it. Best thing to do is go on their Growing Bulldog website, which is very informative. And if you remember from last meeting, that's just about the time that everyone had one of these in their letterboxes, I think, details for you. Links and everything on there. In terms of specifics, Graham and I had a conversation earlier in the week talking about access to Bulldog Station being possibly the biggest issue for people in Ashwell at the moment, coming through the new proposed road layout, which would take you to Lower Bygrave and then left down towards the railway line over a new bridge and along Royston Road from the roundabout, the existing roundabout there, into Bulldog that way. But it doesn't really make it quite clear at all how anyone is supposed to access the station from that route. To build a car park there.
That assumes that those cars from the other part of the area have to go on the park.
So the 507 from the services direction, that exit from Ashwell through Newman, go left, but you then get into a single way traffic light controlled access under the bridge before you can get to the station. And there are no immediate parking spaces or parking places, particularly when they're proposing to close off Icknield Way for traffic cycle route.
That is a system that won't work, so make sure you screw that up right at the beginning.
Yeah.
It just is nonsense.
Hence my suggestion that they consider putting a parking area on that new bypass road that connects in with the bus to allow people to park and then catch a bus to the station. Effectively a park and ride option, because otherwise people from the villages to the north and Ashwell and even Bygrave, they're going to find themselves on the at least a mile away with nowhere to park their car, and they then have to walk or catch a bus into the station.
Yeah. Well, as I said, the consultation is open until the 15th of December.
You'll do it on our behalf.
I will mention that as part of my response.
I've already sent that comment to Urban Civic.
So
I'll
do that.
Okay.
And on behalf of even Brooke, by the way. Absolutely.
Okay.
So other than that, I don't know what else was new. There's a clear preference for citing a new Knights Templar school on the site known as BA3, which is the one at the Coffin end of Bulldog, rather than as initially suggested in the main development on Bygrave Road, as is at the moment. So that was the other main.
Or adding a second school, so that they're very clear now that there will be one secondary school in Bulldog.
Oh, yes.
And it will be Knights Templar, albeit possibly in a different location.
What I'm saying is they're leaning very heavily towards getting another location. And then the question is raised, by me, primarily to the CEO
Open Civic about whether the two proposed schools would be on the same site. If that's the case, because of the an SEND school also as part of the proposal, which I thought belonged within the site of the Knights Templar. And if, well, on further conversation, some of the members who've been presented weren't aware of that being a good idea or whether they discussed it at all. But it'd be my hope that both schools would be on the same site.
What's the SEND?
Special needs.
Oh, special needs. Right.
It's a shortage of SEND sent schools in North Hertfordshire.
I haven't got anything else new. Just quickly. Oh, I have. I've got one thing that I need to hear about that. The thing about the street vendor from last meeting, I had a chat with the licensing manager about this just to clarify the situation. And it is the case that there are controlled streets in the four towns where you have to have a street vendor license to operate there. Anywhere else, you don't need a license. And although I suspect that initially this sort of system was formulated in order to deter people from selling on the streets, in uncontrolled streets. In fact, the opposite is the case, and that the licensing department are quite happy for people to come and set up stalls on the streets temporarily in the uncontrolled streets. You don't need a license to do it, although the person in this particular case that was raised last month does have a street vendor's license. But as it turns out, they don't need it to trade in asphalt.
Is that the one we chased?
I don't know if you actually chased them or not. I remember you threatening to.
No, I'm not near them. They weren't helping me. I was walking in the drive.
But whoever it is, the fishmonger, the candy floss seller, they can trade on the streets of Ashwell. And you don't need the children into Chester. The two other things that I noted, I'll not say till the end. Oh, yes. The drive safe scheme that you mentioned, Martin, the speed watch. Penny was going to try and coordinate that with the other parish councils in Arbury and with, I would say, limited
success. Negative, I'd say. Yeah.
I mean, when I was talking to them in their meeting, there was a sort of general consensus that it would be a good idea. Some were less sort of optimistic about being able to gather troops, as it were, to actually put the scheme into action. And then in response to Billy's email efforts to get some volunteers together, one or two of them came back.
I mean, I've had positive responses from two Ashwell residents who are willing to get involved in a local group, but it's not expanding out to the other parishes. Yeah. So I can resend emails and try and make people.
It might be worth having another go. It might be worth trying to persuade those parish councillors to make the offer
as well.
Maybe people aren't finding out about it if the parish councils can't speak. Because I thought, for example, in Bygrave, there was quite a strong interest.
I think a Facebook post that I haven't seen anything on the Ashwell group, but if we could. If we're looking for volunteers, that'd be a good way to
see. Yeah, I don't know. To be fair, I don't know where the two residents got the details for it, but they did contact me direct, I thought, believe.
Said they would help. Did put it on
Facebook. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it's been covered in actual division news.
I'm not sure where.
I don't think I put it in. I did cover speeding, but not the speed watch group.
Came through.
I haven't sent out a specific news part on it, not for years.
I think someone picked up on something in the parish council.
But it's 7 months since we started talking about this. Perhaps we ought to get something doing.
then assure your clerks that it's regularly done.
Yeah. Okay. You have one more item.
Yes. This item about the charge for uncontested parish council elections. So at a recent full council meeting, and that was approved by the council. So to be charged for your parish council elections contested in the future. So I think on the scale of charges, it was £650 for the council of your size. So you need to put a budget for that over 4 years.
Okay. Something to diary for whenever, 2027. Yeah.
Or spread it across the precept over 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You usually have a reserve fund for elections in case you have a by-election. I think we need to look at whether that's sufficient or not in the context of this and in a potential by-election at any stage.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. Any questions? Not for Tom.
Yeah, maybe we can have a chat.
One final question. Sorry, I assume there's no update on the roadway outside the meadow either. That's the same question.
The footway.
Yeah.
As far as I know, everything has been agreed and all the admin is in place.
Just wait until the meadow to do the work.
Just wait until the work.
Yeah.
And I will lend you the gun when it's set up.
Chris.
Yeah, I had one further question, so I'm just probably not specifically around here, if you're heading off, which was on section 106, which often I find challenging to get a sample calculations of what section 106 demands can be made of various developers. It doesn't seem there was a model and there was a calculation, but that dates back to 2006, and it's basically all attempts to try and find another model or an update have been pushed back by the planning officer saying you just have to make it up yourselves, which just sounds absolutely nuts to me. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered whether you may be able to reach out to other planning officers or whether you have any links into other local authorities to provide some sort of framework so that we have something to base it on rather than making things up.
Yeah, okay,
yeah, I'd
certainly follow that. If you could just email me with just the name who you've been in contact with so far. Yeah.
We've been in contact with Alex Howard for now some months. And I mean, I think he's struggling because there is very little guidance available on this. But I mean, other people must have had problems. So perhaps if we do look outside North Hearts and, you know, we can find some contacts, that might help.
Okay. So what contact you said on that?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Tommy.
Can I just raise one quick query from the public? On the Baldock Road plot point. Yeah. You were talking about improving access to Baldock Station in the car park. Is there any plan to improve access to Ashwell Station and the same route to that station? Because obviously if there's problems accessing Baldock Station, the residents of Ashwell could access Ashwell Station if there was safe access. I regularly walk,
but
it's dangerous.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, we've had quite a lot of discussion about parking at Ashwell Station over the years, so there is something ongoing involving the landowner there. One of the problems is that the land is actually in Cambridgeshire. That means that everything takes at least twice as long to sort out communications flowing. One thing that I was chatting to Steve Jarvis about last night was the possibility, I don't know if it's a realistic one, maybe getting some contribution from the developers of the Baldock expansion towards some car parking for Ashwell Station as part of the whole infrastructure project, because that would also benefit their development if people from Ashwell were able to park at Ashwell Station and didn't feel the need to come to Baldock to catch the train just because they had a better chance of parking there.
That's great. Also, in terms of safe, environmentally friendly access, if you had cycle route walking paths, people could use that and not have to rely on the car park as well.
There is a discussion with the coordinator of integrated transport at North Harts over, but priority is going to the towns rather than the villages, but we have been, Ashwell has been prioritised at the next stage for investment in extending the footpath and cycleway through Cambridge. But you know, the difficulty is that's Cambridgeshire Council, South Cairns Council, and their budgets rather than North Harts. So there needs to be.
Yeah, I completely appreciate that. It's just some of the issues that can be resolved by the parking issues, yeah, by Baldwick, can be resolved by creating greater access to Ashwell Station, and then you get the one end maybe go to Baldwick, the other end go to the Ashwell Station. Essentially, it's.
Yeah. I mean, in essence, I think people living in different parts of Ashwell have a preference for one road rather than the other for various reasons. So both really need to be upgraded.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Just to follow up, this local infrastructure plan that we've been working on has the first phase of funding has been completed. And as Graham said, that's concentrating on the towns, getting cycle movements going in Letchworth and Hitchin, for example. But the second phase of funding, we have got a good chance of having something up Station Road. On that, so hopefully.
What's the time scale?
Sorry, I can't say anything.
it's going to be a few moves. It's not in the foreseeable future. It's a few years away because, I mean, there's all the funding to take place in. Okay. Fine, let's continue with public participation. There's updates on various matters. I think David Cook, you've got your hand marked. Do you want to raise something?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'd got a number of issues that I wanted to raise. I'll be as brief as I can be on them. I'm going to start with 88.11 on the agenda. I thank the clerk for taking the time to reply. There's only one matter, I think, which I would respectfully suggest it could might be a thing that the parish council want to make a clear decision about. I have indicated that, in my opinion, it would be preferable if the parish clerk were declared her role in the CLT as its secretary when the parish council is considering CLT matters. Yourself as a director and the vice chairman as a director have now registered that as an interest and you do declare it. Now, technically, one might say officers are not subject to the same legal requirements for declarations of interest, but I can see no reason why it wouldn't be good practice for someone who has such a significant role in a body that the parish council might be liaising with not to declare that. The clerk hasn't done that historically, and I think it would be a good initiative if the parish council considered whether they thought it was preferable that that happened, or whether the parish council took the view that they were quite relaxed, that they didn't. And that way the burden of deciding the reasonableness of that wouldn't fall on the clerk. It would be a judgment of the parish council. Now, I don't know if you want to consider that now.
Well, sorry, Chair. I'll respond on that point because all of the documents that have been publicised concerning the Community Land Trust and that are on the website and in minutes clearly show that the clerk is the secretary of the Community Land Trust. So, you know, it's not being hidden. it's there in plain sight.
In which case, Chair, why would it not be at the parish council meeting made clear in case somebody doesn't know or hasn't looked at the CLT? That's my position. If the position of the parish council is it doesn't matter because they ought to know from something else, then I'd respectfully disagree. But of course, it's a decision of the parish council.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The second issue I wanted to raise was in regard to working groups. And I just wanted to make a few points about the rules on planning and how they might interact with working groups. Councillor Sims has said previously we must all follow the rules. And all planning matters should be discussed in public. It is exceptional and rare that any planning matter would be discussed behind closed doors. And I think it's important to remember that the obligation for transparency on planning includes showing your workings. If a lot of work goes on a planning subject, then the public have a right to attend and see what issues are weighted, what issues are dismissed, what things are considered important and to overwhelm another issue, and what the thought processes are and what the debate and the dialogue is that leads to a conclusion. If the parish council receives a set of proposals which are about planning, which have not been in the public arena, and simply says, right, we endorse these, my respectful suggestion to the parish council is you've not discharged your obligations to do your business on planning in the public arena.
Can I just stop you on that point? What you're describing is, as far as I can see, a hypothetical situation because all of the planning applications, before they are decided, they are discussed in a public meeting like the one we're having this evening, or at a site meeting. There isn't...
Chair, that's absolutely right. Thank you, sir. That's absolutely right. And you make that point elegantly.
It's a point of raising.
And the reason I'm raising it is because you have, as a parish council, made submissions to the local planning authority, namely the Conservation Area Review, about planning matters, and the work that led to that was not done in public.
Can I stop you on that? That whole matter has been discussed and decided previously. We're not going to go back over that ground. It is any findings as a result of the complaint have been referred to the monitoring officer, and the monitoring officer has advised us that they are confidential and not for public meeting discussion. So I'm sorry, but we're not going to go down that one.
I agree, Chair. I think the point, you asked me for an example and I gave it.
In which case, let's end the discussion on that particular point. Please, if you want to go on to another topic, move on to the other topic.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd like to speak about 93.4. And I'd like to make a distinction between complaints which are uncomfortable and complaints which are unreasonable. Sometimes a complaint might be made and it might be terribly uncomfortable, because it might reveal things that people had rather weren't revealed. But that does not mean it's an unreasonable complaint. And I think one of the things that we might need to consider is, I just want a reassurance, really, from the parish council. Want a reassurance from the parish council that it will be careful to make a distinction between unreasonable complaints and complaints which are uncomfortable. Because I'm not sure that distinction has always been made when the parish council's been discussing these matters previously.
Well, I go back a long time, and I'm pretty sure we do that. So I would suggest we don't spend a lot of time on this, Mr. Cook.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, David. Any other matters you want to raise?
Yes, Chairman. Thank you. 93.3. Is it your intention then, sir, to chair that item?
I've reported on what the status is, so I'm not proposing to that 93.3 is discussed any further, unless other councillors want to raise it something at that point.
Well, Chair, I'd like to exercise my right to speak on that matter for 3 minutes and assure you that I will not stray into any matters that are confidential. Unless, of course, you're going to rule that no one must discuss that matter on the agenda exercising their right to speak. And I must ask you to consider whether you have a declaration of interest.
What is the point that you're trying to make?
Well, Chair, I can't explain it unless you're going to agree that it's in order for me to explain the point. I am not going to breach the confidentiality. I never have. I didn't in July and I didn't in November.
Are you going to make any reference to the Conservation Area Review complaint?
Well, it is an item on the agenda.
It's being discussed and we've dispensed with that item.
Okay, so you're not declaring an interest in it, and it is an item on the agenda, but I am not going to be allowed to speak on it.
Yeah.
Well, we've explained why.
Okay. I wonder if the clerk would like to give any advice about a public right to speak about an agenda item. You would also bear in mind...
We've been given clear advice and guidance by the monitoring officer. I'm not prepared, and we as a parish council are not prepared to go back over that.
Graham, okay. Would it be helpful if I clarified what is intended under the item 93.3, which was the subject of an email correspondence with another parishioner earlier today? It is not specifically about the Conservation Area Review complaint. It is about another matter which has been a matter of conversation between parish councillors and North Hearts. And as I explained earlier, when I wrote the agenda, we were awaiting an item of correspondence from North Hearts that has since been received, marked as confidential. That's what
my point is a very simple one. Please just trust me for a moment.
I don't trust you.
Thank you, Councillor. The question is a simple one. What have we learned? I just want some reassurance that, you know, it feels to me like we're going to close the debate down on this as quickly as we can. But the point about this is Ashwell Parish Council operates as a publicly accountable body. Mistakes happen. Some complaints are upheld. Some complaints are rejected. Some complaints are partially upheld. But every one of those is an opportunity to learn something. And I think the important point for me here is not who's the goodies and baddies in this. The important point here is, have we learnt anything as a result of all of this anxiety? Because if we haven't learnt anything, if we would do exactly the same thing again in the same circumstances, then that's an abomination.
Maybe that's something the point. You should be asking yourself, David. Right, let's move on. I think we've given you the more than enough time. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Chair.
So, are there any other matters from members of the public? Or any councillors that want to raise anything at this point? Okay, in which case we'll go back into session.
I'm sorry, I've got a. I don't know whether this, there's still an outstanding
fiber broadband. Oh, the fiber broadband. Well, we just to note really that's finished. The second company has withdrawn.
What I was reading was Anne Fletcher's objection. Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Jim, that was put on the day because Mr. Cook was.
No, I think we don't do that.
No. As long as she's happy, that's fine.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Okay, so reports from working groups.
What about the R scheme?
The R scheme, there is still dialogue taking place between the commissioner and Chris Fraser. That's still live, and I believe the group. We don't have any further information on that at the moment. I haven't really got anything much to add to the discussion that's already taken place on urban and civic, which is 8816.
Which one?
891, trees and hedges. So David's not here.
I don't think there's anything to add.
Nothing significant to report there. Green energy and EV charging infrastructure. Quite a lot has been taking place, but not with clear outcomes at the moment. On EV charging, I have been in dialogue with a private company called Believe, which will, they exist to provide electric vehicle charging points in communities like Ashwell at no cost, because they get their funding from the government and the power suppliers. I'm waiting to hear back from them, and I've given the same information to the Harts County Council team, identifying places in Ashwell that are owned by private organisations like pubs, the village hall, sites that some of the landowners may be interested in providing public charging points. And then I've identified those houses, or the majority of those houses, that have the parking, who would potentially benefit from having electric vehicle charging points near them on the street. And for those Harts County Council to review those sites and come forward with proposals, because clearly not everyone may want parking position. But you know, we've done what we what we can do at this stage to raise the issue and encourage it. What I can say out of that is that the pubs, certainly the Green King pubs, are already planning to install EV charging points on their sites, but priority is being given to those with accommodation. So the Three Tons was likely to get EV charging before the Rose and Crown. they are clearly pursuing suppliers themselves, giving that information to both Believe and Harts County Council so that they can pitch to source an alternative supply, which maybe may deliver charging at a lower price to people that use it.
Just one quick addition. The only area that wasn't mentioned in your very comprehensive list that would make sense to me is the parking bays out immediately outside of the shop. I just wondered whether something could be done there.
Yeah, potentially, but you've got, there is the slight conflict over having a quick turnover of parking there so that people can actually use the shop and carry their goods to their
work. Other areas of that, an example is Potter, where my mum they've got EV charging points which you can use during the day, but they're time limited how long you can spend there for the shops, and at night those limits are removed and only electric vehicles can park in those spaces. Right. So such a similar scheme could be an effort here.
Okay. Could you just remind me of that, and I'll forward it on to thanks. And on the green energy of the community as a whole, you'll be aware that we've now taken out membership of Community Energy England. And they have monthly meetings, which I've attended one of those.
Sorry, Graham, I need to interrupt. There seems to be some paper shuffling or something else going on across the table, which is causing your audio to cut out. So somebody else is making noise that is dropping out your audio.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yep.
Let's all try and be static while I'm talking then. Community Energy England, they haven't responded to my request to carry out a survey of the needs and means of providing green energy for Ashwell, because they are waiting for funding from the government, which is a £10 million grant. Once the government has issued that money, then I do expect, and we'll be chasing, to get our audit done, or at least to apply for the audit. In addition, I attended one of three two-hour long carbon literacy courses being run by Harts County Council or funded by them, and I'm due to have a meeting with Steve Jarvis following the final of those three courses, which is on the, so our meeting is scheduled for the 20th of September. There is quite a bit going on that should eventually lead to a plan as to how we can reduce carbon, how we can reduce carbon usage, potentially create more efficient carbon-free energy for the community.
Okay, we have quite a good team on board now. I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but doing the weddings and anniversary of Novitz, we've now got John Gay Rhodes. We've got close contacts with the church and the community about that. They've really taken a bit between their teeth and have got a lot of material in now, so that's very positive. Likewise, Tracy Young is working closely with me to get material in. So it's not looking too bad at all. We're about where we were last year, which is okay. With the exception of the advertising, there's been quite a bit of pushback on the advertising this year. Now, fortunately, the weekend I managed to get another 350 quid's worth in, which takes us up to about 3,650, and that still leaves about 1,300 odd short of where we'd like to be, and that's going to be quite a big ask from now on. So chances are we're going to run a deficit this year. I mean, on the plus side, all the work is absolutely free, and the budget does actually assume that some of the work will be done by the clerk or deputy clerk, which would actually have a cost, albeit an opportunity cost. So, you know, things aren't quite as bleak as they look at the moment when you look at it that way. I received quotes for printing, and we'll be discussing those in the exclusion of the press and public element of the meeting. They do need some discussion. I don't think it's just about price. We do need to talk about other issues around service as well, but we'll come on to that later. Does anybody have any questions at all or observations? I hope you're all looking forward to it.
No,
it is going to be another bumper issue. We sat down a couple of months ago and said, look, we're going to make it smaller because it just doesn't go through the letterboxes anymore. But we've got a lot of very good material coming in, and it's very hard to cut out stuff that's going to be of interest to the village.
When do you need articles? What's your cut-off on that?
I'll come to you a bit later, because I can actually leave the parish council section relatively late. So, you know, just before Christmas would be a nice time to get those articles in, which is only fair because I haven't actually asked you for the articles yet.
I didn't think you had. Just wanted to check.
But I will be.
Okay.
Fine. So perhaps you can have a think about things that you might like to say that should go in the yearbook. I mean, everybody's got their own areas of interest, I know. And if you've got something you want to say, then it's a good opportunity.
Germany's ringing me next week. So.
Right, good.
Well, that should cover up quite a few things, actually. It's like Arbury Banks, the Springs, so yeah, churchyard. So yeah, that should cover up a lot.
Good. Okay, thanks. Affordable housing. Next.
Yeah, so I was going to ask to switch on to 8914, because I think until we've got the housing needs survey done, the sort of next stage of the affordable housing strategy really leads from that. So I'm keen to hear the update on that, and then sort of feel feather the strategy in according to that survey, really.
Okay. Well, on that, yes, Norton and I did have a meeting with the CDA Hearts representative, and we're at the stage of discussing with him the draft questionnaire and the covering letter to go out, but it would be in the new year. Some comments, I think, on that, and then we'll circulate it for any other comments that parish councillors have. But it's a fairly, I mean, it's not our survey as such. It's, we can provide input, but it's managed by CDA Hearts on behalf of. Those draft documents when we're happy that they're ready to draft to circulate.
Well, I mean, I think it's good that CDA Hearts are badging this survey and, you know, in charge of it, because you know, the conclusions there will be free of any kind of suggestion. There might be sort of a particular frequency of ideas. So yeah, that'll be avoided.
Okay. Section 106, anything to add on that? Chris?
I don't get anything from me other than we're sort of bashing our heads against the brick wall in a way in terms of getting guidance from the planning officers who just say that there is no real mechanism to form a view on what can and can't be claimed, which seems just bananas to me, because it's not like an unusual request. So hence the reason for reaching out to Steve, really, to see if there's any additional avenues that we can pursue. Otherwise, we'll have to come up with a mechanism probably loosely based on the 2006 one, although that does appear to have been discredited to some extent. So it's...
Yeah, I'm just worried what sort of waiting for Harry. So, I mean, it's a very unsatisfactory situation,
yeah,
isn't it? So, I mean, somebody should be helping us on this, really. It's, you know, I mean, the planning people, okay, I know that they're a bit stuck as well, but there must be some sort of government guideline or, you know, somewhere central that can issue some sort of advice. So perhaps that line's worth following as well as talking
to other... Should have made reference to Tom, Steve, sorry. But, yeah, we'll reach out to see.
Maybe the HAPTC can advise them. Moving on to 89.6, Jane suggested putting that on because the thinking is that maybe the working group covering items 89.4 and 89.5 all could come together under a housing provision and funding working group because they're all interlinked.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
Any thoughts? Another.
Combining
the housing needs survey, housing.
So it's the affordable.
The 106, the whole lot. Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's still very early days yet. We don't really know where we're going on section 106 in the future. And also, we haven't done the housing needs survey either. We could prepare a working group with a bridge to cover both areas. It won't yield any immediate advantages, but yeah, it's an idea, definitely.
Okay. With affordable housing, just sort of
yeah, we could establish some basic ground rules.
Yeah.
And have a think about that. Yeah.
Okay. Right, planning. Planning matters.
I need to declare interest on this first block, so I will take my leave.
Okay. We'll come and get you.
Yeah.
Are you going to be standing in the lobby?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
I just asked, why does he have the leave? He's never had that before.
Well, that's part of the new...
Okay.
No.
No, just the new in line with North Arts.
In line with North Arts.
Yeah. I'm afraid.
And the other parishes.
Unless there was a valid reason for him to stay in the meeting, which. So, 54 Station Road. This is erection of a 3-bed detached dwelling behind the property 54 Station Road. I believe there's been a number of.
I checked the North Hearts website earlier this afternoon, may have been more subsequently. There were a number of representations from close neighbours, not 100%, but the majority with objections, and also some, but not all, of the residents of Townsend Meadow have employed a professional agent to make their objections on their behalf.
I mean, obviously, we should be governed by policies, planning policies, and the neighbourhood planning policies. What are the views at the moment?
I think Chris might want to say something as well, but shall I go first? Is that all right? It's interesting because it does have parallels with the Gardeners Lane application that we've recently discussed. At that stage, when we discussed it, we talked about the fact that, you know, although it seems like a reasonable sort of development, there was a history to this, and that there had been earlier applications under very similar physical circumstances regarding surroundings, which had gone to appeal and returned down by the inspector. And there were certainly parallels between that Gardens Lane application and this one. It's in the conservation area. It's fairly near the boundary, which was an issue for Gardens Lane. Adopting that sort of thinking, I looked at the site and I thought, well, actually, you know, there are some similarities. But I mean, if you take one of the key reasons that the inspector rejected the application of Gardeners Lane, and that is the transitional character. If you look around Gardeners Lane, you can see the fact that, you know, there is a definite thinning out of the building density in that area. But if you go to Station Road, I mean, looking at the site, you've got Townsend Meadow on the one side, and you've got the properties of the Lucas Lane on the other, and then over the road, you've got all the Station Road properties as well. Now, I did look quite hard, and in fact, there is a kind of view, if you look absolutely directly west from in front of that property, that is fairly clear because there are open gardens in there. But that's about the only bit that's really got any kind of transitional quality to it. It's not by any means to the same extent of Gardens Lane. Another point was that the Gardeners Lane application got rejected because it doesn't contribute to the rural character. I don't mean to be disparaging anywhere, but I looked at the site in Station Road and I looked around me and I didn't really see much rural character. It's only really beyond the Station Road properties that you get to the open field, but of course the Station Road properties are all a block in the way. There isn't, in my view, there isn't much rural character to contribute to. So I think just on the edge, but, you know, in the case of Station Road, I would say there's probably not enough there to object to in terms of the criteria that Gardeners Lane displayed and was supported by the inspector. So for that reason, you know, I wouldn't object to this development. However, and this is something I didn't realise immediately, there is a bus stop right outside that property. The drive from the house that's there, and then the drive from the house that they want to build would come out either, I believe, either side of that bus stop. Kids are going to be getting on that bus to go into school, aren't they? So I think there's probably some sort of highways issue there that would make building on that site problematic. Ultimately, I think it's for the highways department of the county to make the full case. But I certainly think we should flag up concerns about putting a property there, bearing in mind the location of the bus stop. So that's where I stand.
Okay.
So before you go on, you said what you could do and what you can't do, and you compared it with ours. What is your suggestion?
That would help, wouldn't it? So I would say we have concerns about the development because of the presence of the bus stop.
That's what I thought you were, but you hadn't said it, you see, that's what I thought it was.
Sorry, Martin.
I thought it was important that you actually define that.
Yeah.
Okay. Chris, okay. Anything?
Yeah, I mean, these are just my views and thoughts on it. I take on board what was said. Like, I think to anchor a precedent on a decision that was made 17, 18 years ago by a planning inspector is, by definition, as time passes, the weight of that decision should carry less weight because times change, villages change, circumstances change. But we're not actually obviously talking about Carlos Lane, but just in terms of the comparison, I think that comparison gets weaker over time in terms of it comes to that suppressor. My concerns from aesthetic and, you know, from just a general, I suppose, personal view is that, you know, settlements generally are developed along a linear a layout along roads because they're means of communication. And by developing in the gardens essentially behind existing linear patterns of development is quite unusual or not natural in the nature of a village like ours. Clearly there are cul-de-sacs such as the one nearby that have been created fairly recently, but it's fairly atypical for this particular village. And I think it sets a bit of a precedent, potentially, if it does get consented, for other properties to potentially hive off parts of their garden for additional development, which, as I said, I don't think feels natural within the conservation area where the street pattern is very different. I also have some sympathy, I think, with the neighbours over the kind of overlooking potential. And whilst the overlooking of the property to which this is proposed to be built in, you know, the people there may be comfortable with that because obviously a vested interest, I suppose, in developing in the rear of their plot. You know, clearly over time the ownerships may be separate, and therefore one needs to think about the overlooking and privacy issues sort of into perpetuity, not just in the immediate future. So I personally don't really like this sort of development. That doesn't mean that it's not in line with wider planning policy and shouldn't and won't get approved. But I wanted to note those particular concerns that I have because, say, I don't feel hugely comfortable over what's being proposed. So those are my observations, really.
So the fact that it's not part of the linear plan of the dwellings in the conservation area means that it doesn't sit well in the conservation area. That's one of the things you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then there's also the concern about, you know, being overlooked, which might actually affect the design of the property, but not necessarily whether or not you build it.
Yes.
But the main reason for not putting it there is really it's not part of the character of that part of the village in conservation.
Yeah, that's my sort of another profession. Yeah. You on it just from observations, really.
Yeah. I think that's a point worth making, isn't it? Yeah.
Vinny?
I need to sort of mirror what Chris said there about setting a precedent for future developments within back gardens.
Well,
essentially.
Yeah, ironically, there is a property either that adjoins that proposed development at the rear of a house in Lucas Lane. It's a rear garden development. So, you know, pretty close by, there is a precedent, and arguably you could say, well, the garden, you know, part of the garden of a house off Lucas Lane with access to Ashwell Street, you know, was sold off to provide the development of Townsend Meadow. So the sort of use of garden space for residential properties has got some previous instances.
Yeah, but I mean that's before we had the neighbourhood plan, so I think that,
it is
the grounds possibly are a little bit stronger now, aren't they?
Well,
I think it's but when you look at the meadow as an aberration, I think it's the words that people have used. It's a suburban development in the middle of a rural village, which.
Sorry, what was that?
Well, I think words have been used that the Townsend Meadow is a bit of an aberration in terms of, the form of development that was permitted there. That may be, it has precedent and whatever else, but I know those opinions have been made in the past. And that was before we had our neighbourhood plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is actually more. The Townsend Meadow development is more visible and intrusive than the development would be because it's tucked away out of sight. It doesn't limit significant views. It's not highly visible as a structure to conflict with the conservation area character of the area. I find it looking at and being involved with the neighbourhood plan and with planning policy, I find it fairly difficult to criticism of it, something on which we could hang an objection other than the bus stop issue, which I think is valid. But given that the bus stop has been sited so close to an existing driveway, there is the logic of objecting to a development just because another driveway is positioned the other side of it.
Well, that's making it much, much more difficult to manage, isn't it? I mean, one driveway, okay, but yeah.
I think that falls back on the. On the highways department to be persuaded that the splays are adequate to provide visibility. But the principle of putting a bus stop within so many meters of a driveway, that's already been.
I think it's worth flagging that stated. Up, just so that highways do address that.
Fully. I mean, I suggest from the general discussion that we don't have a solid reason for objection, but would request highways to clarify the safety aspect of the proposed driveway in relation to the bus stop.
That just pushing the thing further along. Did we not make a decision or what?
Well, that would be my proposal.
Right.
How do you feel about this garden development then, particularly bearing in mind that I remember that was about 3 years ago. Another property.
In Lucas Lane. Lucas Lane. It was at least 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, there have been quite a few at one time. The planning, planning policy at one time was okay, let's put it like that, with what they call backland development because of density of housing. That's a little bit off the agenda again now. It's not favoured backland development in planning policy. So but it's whether it's backland development or whether it's infill.
Do you want to mention that, though, Chris, forward in our letter?
Yeah, we'll just... I'm proposing that we accept it subject to clarification by highways, unless we want to flag the concerns about rear garden development.
I personally think that this is a forum for debate, isn't it? It's not sort of one person's decision against another's. It's a debate, and those are my opinions. They're not necessarily ones that are going to align with planning policy or not. I would be happy if you were sort of not objecting to the development, but asking for consideration to be given to those points. I'd planning also to give consideration to those points, such as the validity of backland development, the overlooking. the bus stop and the potential sort of non-conformity with the more linear pattern of a conservation area of the village. That's all we can ask because we don't make decisions. We make a comment to the planning officers and they make decisions.
I'll go along with that.
Okay. Yeah. All in favour of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Do we get
just
the same?
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't realise that.
That's the reason. Okay.
Sorry. Yes. Before we go to the session two, you've heard.
I think our main objection is the overlook of the new house. First floor windows will be overlooking our properties in Townsend Meadow. And I know they'll be overlooking people's properties in Lucas Lane as well. People who objected to that.
Well, they haven't actually. There hasn't been an objection.
Yes, there has.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. Unfortunately, I don't think that, I mean, it's up to the planning officers to take a decision on that. I don't think that that planning policy recognises overlooking as a potential reason for objection.
And in some cases, they may require windows to be obscured glass, for example. For example, in the Claybush Meadow development, they were quoting figures of 24 metres back to back, but not all of the houses in that development were. So it wasn't an absolute requirement for them to be 24 metres. That's window to window, only the bedroom windows. That's the 24 metre guideline. Mm. So a grey area. As I say, there are circumstances where a window directly overlooking would be required to be obscured glass, top of the bathroom window or the landing window, isn't it?
But they're not obscured glass in their bedroom windows.
No, precisely. And that's where the 24 metres back to back.
Overlooking our patio.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where the planning officer would make a decision because the guidelines are 24 metres.
The new driveway as well will go directly past our rear fence where we get the sun in our garden and right to sit. So we've got now a driveway going past our garden where previously it's open ground. We lose the sun going down at night, so we'll have been more shade when we have open views. You're talking about views, rural views. You may not get it from Station Road, you certainly get it from the back gardens of Townsend Meadow. So all the houses 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 will all be affected by that house block in the view. We won't be able to see the church spire anymore from our garden. And I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, Richard.
So yeah, I also live at the abomination of Townsend Meadows. So I think that's my that's where my projections come from. A few points that you've raised. I think some of the backland development issues that you're talking about, and you may have put them slightly, I completely agree with you. The backland development is not a linear that they're proposing. I think Gardeners Lane was an open field, roughly, wasn't backland in a strict definition. I also think Townsend Meadow probably wasn't backland, other than the fact that the Townsend house owner had a ridiculously large garden. So technically, it's not backlands. So I think you can't quite blur the two issues.
Yeah, that's right.
And the precedent set of Gardeners Lane is however many years ago. So I agree again, passage of time. Also, you have to do it on a case by case basis.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I was distinguishing it from Gardeners Lane.
But you were distinguishing it from a point of you were saying that Gardeners Lane was rejected, whereas this one maybe not because there are some distinguishing features. So I think my point, there are a few. The safety aspect of the road, the new access point, I completely get your point why put a bus step so close to an existing access point, but the new access creates an island essentially whereby the bus stop will be floating between two access points. The vision splay, I believe in the application, is not quite right. They're saying it's 2.5 metres, not. You have an overcrowding of access points all within a very short period of space. So your point of they already have an access point right next to a bus stop. Will you be saying that if somebody comes out of the new access point, somebody's coming out of the old 54 station road access point, and there's a child crossing the road? Or will you still stand by that position that they've already built them very close to a bus stop? That's for you to stand by. I believe Highways Agency have already objected on the point of having two access points very close to each other. So from a safety point, I think it's a bit iffy. But obviously, I'm objecting, I live close. That's my subjective view. There are also a lot of junctions and cars parked very close together. Adding another one will reduce vision on a road that's already quite well used. So the access point is a big issue at one point. Second point, it is within still within the conservation area. There are an avenue of lime trees that are in excess of 60 foot, probably. I haven't gone out with the tape measure, but they're quite big, they're old. Gareth's point of wrong, the access point, they'll be driving directly along those. As part of the planning, one lime tree is requested to be felled, and the second lime tree, I think the crown, excuse me if I'm wrong, is reduced. So they're taking the bottom branches up. And is that raising the crown or reducing the crown? But they're taking significant things off a tree. I find it slightly ironic that earlier on we were talking about carbon reduction, yet we're quite happy to allow on your comments earlier that this plan and application is no major concerns, but we're bringing it down to 60-foot tree. Slightly at odds with conservation area policies that I believe that we were trying to uphold. Where one tree comes down, where's the second tree? Where's the third tree? It starts to unravel and snowball.
There is actually a policy that where a tree is taken down, two trees should be put in its place.
But admittedly so, but that how long will those trees take to grow to 60 foot and account for carbon capture? So just for a simple case, the habitat. For I sit in the back garden, we have bats. Has anybody done a bat survey to come? Is that a roost? I don't know. There's nothing in the horticultural report from the planning application, and there's no habitat report to say what's staying in the tree. If we're trying to maintain a conservation area, I don't know how you can support an application that fells trees. The issue, again, I believe in the plan, in some of the conservation area guidance is, I believe, you've seen my objections in when I'm touching past, about drainage. You fell trees, you reduce trees, natural soaker is bound to be reduced. If you then concrete it over a grass area, natural soaker, what happens with flooding? Our weather is getting drastically worse. Okay, so there are some of my points that I've written down, but there are a lot of points that when you group together, I think we've overlooked some of these points and just saying that we won't do any objections or making any concerns. I just think there are some issues that need to be addressed. In addition to the potential loss of amenity points, that I agree that with Gareth's point, I will be overlooked. So I appreciate that they are not necessarily a background for planning objection, but the other points, safety, upholding the conservation area, backland development, again, where does that snowball start going? If you start cutting down trees or allowing people to build back gardens, where does that stop?
Okay, thanks. Do you feel that the concerns that we reflect Richard Parsons' comments in there?
I think it's slightly unfortunate, and apologies, I didn't ask you here to talk about that, but that we didn't hear perhaps some impressions before. I think my comments probably still stand, but we should make sure that as part of that sort of request for those items to be taken into consideration, that perhaps we get the point about the concerns of neighbouring parishioners or neighbouring residents to include items such as amenity, overlooking the highways point, the natural habitat points that have been raised. At the end of the day, they will be judged by people who are
experts in their field as opposed to us, but we should be pointing those out as those have been raised, and we would want those to be considered in whatever decisions made. I think that's only fair. Okay.
So I've got the bus stop as a highways issue and other at the access points as an issue, the linear layout on the backland development, design issues which have privacy and overlooking issues, and the natural the impact on the natural environment, the root of the lime tree.
Okay. We missed anything out.
Is that the kind of key
just,
point?
Just to make the objection of the conservation here, which we've discussed a few points, if you start to allow those to be eroded, what is the point of the conservation airport? I grew up in rural Wales. I do get the conservation areas, and my family live in the Brecon Beacons National Park, and once you start to erode those things, it's quite easy to go down a road that you can't then stop anything else. So if there's no point in having the conservation area if you're not going to protect a tree.
Bearing in mind we live in Tapsy, so I'll be overcrowded.
Okay.
Because it's a nice house to live in. Very nice neighbours. The other thing I would mention was, is there any archaeological concerns to take into account, it being so close to Ashmore Street? And there were archaeological digs, I believe, taking place on the Townsend Meadow site.
They had to be because of these sort of developments.
There's also no design statement attached to the planning application, so we don't know what materials they're going to use. So, there's a number of reasons why we shouldn't accept anything at this point.
I think the lack of DNA statements.
That is a point, actually. If they haven't got a design statement, they need
DNA statements.
Okay.
I'm surprised they actually allowed it through planning without that.
Okay. Brian, thank you. Let's move on to hopefully it's not. Five Philosopher's Gate, for a proposal to insert roof lights on side roof slopes and insertion of a second floor rear window. This conversion. It's a modification of a previous application which had a dormer window which was intrusive. Application of these windows, there shouldn't be a privacy aspect associated with it.
The next door neighbour has reiterated their objections on the website, but it's a little unclear as to whether all of the amendments in the second application have been taken into account.
I missed the first bit, Jane. You were looking
at the neighbour.
The neighbour has, this is the second application, as Graham said, and the neighbour who objected to the previous one has objected again to this one.
Yeah.
But certainly a very quick read of it this afternoon, and Nikki's looked at this as well, is that it's a little bit unclear on some of the aspects of it, whether all of the new, of the changes have been taken on board by the neighbour. I think the planning officer will pick up on that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Comments from councillors? Chris?
I didn't think about anything specific.
Martin?
No.
I mean, I find it very difficult to see an objection on that particular application. So, is there a proposal, Martin?
Yeah, I've just said that.
To proposal to accept?
Yeah.
No objection.
Okay.
No objection.
Yeah. All in favour of that?
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the planning consultations, tree consultation. Get Norton back in. Yeah. So, felling required or being requested on 46. Concerns about that, they're all proving.
So, did David say anything to you before
meeting? I have communications with David today. He's got no objections at all to the two that are on the outlined on the agenda, because they're only prunings. There have been two additional ones come in since the agenda was issued, and because there's a 6-week rule on turnaround that North Hartlepool has to abide by, they have to be added tonight if we are to do the mini meeting. One of them is the Gables 11 High Street, and that one is again nearly pruning of two trees, so David doesn't have any concerns to raise on that one. The other one is the old rectory in Hodwell, which does have some significant trees in it.
Yeah.
All bar one is maintenance, which, if my memory serves me correctly, is similar to the previous owner did about 15, 20 years ago. So that's not unreasonable. The only, there is a felling of a smaller prunus tree, there is little detail given on the website. That said, they're not required to, just for a TCA submission. If it was a TPO, they would have to.
Right.
The only comment that David has made is that one of the big lime trees is to be reduced by 4 metres to shape and balance it. And he was concerned that that might be quite a significant, but seeing as it is to shape and balance, the implication is that it's
It might fall over, so it's a safety issue.
So, and there's no way that the planning officer is going to object to that.
Okay. All right, in that case,
so,
no comment.
No objection.
So there's no significant removals of any significant tree.
Right, okay. Item 90.5 is just to note the decisions. Including Kirby Manor Farm, which
sorry, I missed the on 90.5 the scarf place without the garage with garage and the plant.
Can
I? When the application plan for it is going to be excited.
Yeah.
Well, I can't really stay on the record. Okay. So I know where it is in the committee schedule at the moment, but it's subject to change, and it's going to be at some point in the new year. I thought I'd see some of those January.
Well, the next planning committee meeting is scheduled for the 25th of January, and it says that on their website. So if it goes to a January meeting, it'll be that one. If they bounce it to the next one, there's not another one to put there.
So, I mean, we will have time to make representations. Speaks when we in the new year, which we will get notified as and when it's going to be scheduled.
Can I take it then, Graham, that you would want to have a speaking slot, because the moment they become available, should. you have to get in there rapidly.
Put a mark on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the moment they become available, I'll put one here. Yeah?
Yeah, please. Right, on to item 91, reports from committees. HR committee, there is a proposal to discuss a potential appointment to the clerk role, and I suggest for various confidentiality reasons that that is discussed at the end of this meeting.
Perhaps we should formally welcome
a new
deputy clerk.
Formally, yes.
Thank you.
Welcome to the
parish
council.
Baptism
clerk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
On to reports from parish council. 92.1.
Well, that's good Martin. News. That's good news. The development at the near the pub. That's taking place next week, I think. We've been after that for about nearly a year, getting an agreement to it. It's really to get rid of all that rubbish that's blocking everything up, and it will go back to its status, and that'll be a good thing.
The tree man is booked for the Wednesday the 20th, Martin.
Yeah, I knew it was before. Yeah, thanks. And then a Rosper, in fact, came and looked at the thing.
Safety inspection.
What?
Safety inspection of the...
Yeah, that's what...
The springs, yeah.
And we did very well on that. There are a couple of things that need to be done, which we knew about. And as you know, we've talked about who could do it. And I still don't know. Have we got anybody to do the stones or not?
The steps.
Yeah, we've asked for quite some room. I'm just waiting to hear back on like quotes and availability for that. So I'm hoping it'd be very soon.
Right. Is that the one we were chasing up? Or?
Yeah. I'm just waiting to hear back from that.
Oh, that's good news then. So spring's in good better.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I'll keep on top of that and make sure we get sorted.
Thank you. St Mary's Churchyard grounds maintenance, the issue with a house owner concerning ivy on her wall has now been resolved.
Yeah, did you know, just a bit of light on this, when I got involved in it, there were 9 phone calls back on messages backwards and forwards from the church, and I think you were enjoying it once, phase, Jane. And it was a tiny little thing that needed to be done.
Yeah.
And it wasn't our act. We shouldn't have needed to do it. It's down to them. So I just said, well, we'd do it and we'd absorb it. But it's amazing how a little thing is made up by so many people involved in it.
Somebody has concerns. If somebody has concerns, they report to them.
It's something that needs to be done. It'll be going backwards and forwards, but I'll back over and get it done. And it's, look, you won't see it now.
Indeed. Parish clock's had its service and is now functioning. Are there any updates on the war memorial?
That's a job for us to get our teeth into, and ditto the Chapel of Rest one as well.
Right.
So I'll have to do this.
Yep. Recreation ground upgrade, there is no further action on that, but it should be discussed next year in a public. Doing fundraising, so alternatives to fundraising required.
Graham, can I just quickly add, Nikki's done a great job in getting all the kind of minor works done. There's a broken window, roof repairs, gutters, just, you know,
insulation especially around the pipes and generically in the roof to avoid freezing pipes.
But we did do a drain down to prevent freezing over the last cold snap. But it was only for 4 or 5 days in there.
And it all back there's a mysterious hole.
Oh yeah, somebody punched a hole in the home changing room again.
They'll be lost.
That's me. The room is
92.5. It's been covered.
Sorry, Vinny, that was me just moving things on. The war memorial and the cemetery are the same thing.
Sorry.
We've got to have insurance foundations on those two things. So, no, right.
Is there anything on behalf of David on?
Can I just ask about the recreation garden? My main thing, but someone's put up adverts up there for Christmas trees on the. Is that permitted? Is that allowed? Did they pay for it?
It's actually on Highway's land, because Highway is on the verge that's outside the metal barrier.
I don't know. Still thought I'd mention it.
I mean, Highway's attitude towards that, technically it's flight posting, I suppose, and illegal advertising, but if it's not permanent, it can go. On a more villagey note, if there are any kind of village notices that get left lying around, it's part of Alan the Eco's job to go around and move them and get outdated and tatty.
Is there anything to report on small gains from
David? Not that I know of.
Street furniture, Norton.
Oh, right, yes, the Elizabethan survey. I did a final whiz round last Sunday to assess the level of litter in the bins. I've written a report.
and made a few suggestions. But what I want to do is circulate it to everybody and also get it on the website as well, because I don't have the answers. As I said, I've made some suggestions, but I think we need to listen to a few other views before we make a decision. So subject to that, can we have it on next month and have a debate about it then?
Can I ask you, did you go up to walked at some up to the end there? Because when we did our bench survey, which, you know, I'm sure you've all been waiting the last 2 hours to hear about, Billy and I will update you the next item. There were two bins up the new end of Walkwoods, which looks as though they've been set fire to or burnt out.
All right.
Which I presume a council, sorry.
There's lots of fun is regarding bins. Because Walkdon's is a distinct housing development and it's under the control of a housing association, it's Origin Housing, all of the responsibility for street cleansing and indeed street furniture is down to the housing association. So they're not North Arts and they're not ours.
We were only looking at the bins that we own that are on highways.
That's one of the reasons I know that.
Study.
Yeah,
it's not really nice.
The residents frequently make petitions to the housing association for such things.
That's got quite a play area as well.
There's nothing really we can do about those, so they're nothing to do with us.
Fair enough.
Well, I suppose if one had an approach from the residents for a bit of support to kick the housing association, the parish council might feel like
Okay, thank you, Morton. Seats.
Now you've got the spreadsheet, Chris.
So we've got a spreadsheet. We're nearly there. So we spent an afternoon at whatever, going around all the bench stuff. We've got a photographic survey of riveting stuff. Of the 35, 38 sort of bits and bobs, there's probably five benches and seats that need some sort of potential. One of which is the one up the top of Angel's Meadow that we might talk about now or might do later on this. I'll say to you in the agenda. There's one by the back of the allotments, on the foresters' allotments on Ashwell Street that's pretty derelict, and there's one at the back end of the school at the back entrance which probably needs attention. There's only five in total, which is kind of good. All the rest are pretty good condition. So what we'll do is we'll circulate a note on that around the councillors after the meeting once we've finalised the spreadsheet. And then what I was going to suggest is that we have a look at the budget for next year in terms of the financials and make sure we've got enough in there to cover the ones that need urgent attention. I think there's a budget this year which we can probably roll into next year and then make sure there's enough in there. But these things are about £600 a pop, so they're not small. And actually, of the five, there's probably two or three of which one the Women's Institute are proposing to fund that actually need attention. The other couple probably could last another year or two if we need it.
Probably best to phase phase the work over a couple of years.
So what I'll do is I'll play the spreadsheet, the photographic schedule, send it across to you guys so you've got a record, and I'll circulate a recommendation sort of separately to the meeting, and then hopefully we can put it in the budget.
Right. Okay.
And we prioritise on this, can't we? The ones that feel need urgent.
Okay.
And I'll continue to forward to you anything that we get from the WI on their desire to help out with the weather. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Any other items to report? Right. On to finance and governance. Budget tracking. Nothing special to note. Any comments on that? So the 93.11 there's the Yearbrook print quotes, which we'll cover after this meeting in private. There's a quote for reprint of the village map, which you've been circulated with. That would be subject to funds being transferred from another budget category, because the 137 fund is being fully utilised.
Is that this one? Right?
Yes. If the funds are available, I would recommend that we, because of the because the incremental cost is a fraction of reprinting in another 12 months' time.
How many did we get last time? How long did they last?
3,000, and they lasted about a year.
Just a year?
They are really popular. Yeah. We provide them to, well, outside the village, they go to the tourist office in Letchworth, the museum in Hitchin, the Baldock Library. Within the village, Blue Barber Mustard has them, and also the Caravan Club. The Caravan Club is a really, really good source of them. They give one to every new person that comes down there. When I took the last lot down 2 weeks ago, I said, well, you won't be wanting any more until Christmas. They said, we're fully booked for Christmas, and people really want to come because they use the pubs and the shops and that kind of thing. Achieves your objective of supporting retailers.
That was a proposal. I would second it.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone happy with that funding?
Okay. Yep. So it'll come out of the section 137 budget. If you are happy to via, and I suggest do it in big lumps, via £1,000 from what is in the HR budget at the moment, which, because you haven't paid me a pension this year,
which is heading for an underspent.
Yeah. So that's underspent.
Does that make allowance for the back pay?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine, because this is just in the pension category. Right. Okay, so there's not a problem on that. There will be about, I think, probably £4,000 at the moment. You're in the black on the HR budget, because you haven't had 2 members of staff over this year. But it's a financial regulation that if you want to via between major cost settings, it has to go to full council. Within a cost setting, you can do it yourself.
Okay? Yeah. Right. So that'll go up next time.
Everyone have to do that then.
Yeah.
Thank you. On to 93.2 then, budget setting. We haven't got all the information through from North Arts yet on the number of properties that would contribute to the precept. We still need to do a little more work on finalising the budget, checking the numbers that we've already put into the draft. Suggesting that we finalise in the January meeting, which is scheduled for the 17th. So it's really a question of if everyone is happy with that. Should there be a much of a revision on where we've got to at the moment? Would you like a meeting, or would you be happy to cover it by email correspondence?
That's only for the work in progress. It will have to come back to a full council meeting for approval.
In general,
it's merely how much you want to be involved as we kind of go tailor through. It. Really.
Yeah.
Can send out regular updates as we get it through. For example, we haven't heard back from the two contracts.
I'd recommend you would be. Yeah. You should be involved.
Yeah.
If it's all possible.
I mean, we can set another meeting in early January if you'd like.
I'm happy for it to be circulated by email, and then perhaps if we think a meeting is worthwhile, having received those updates, then we can call one or suggest one.
Okay.
Right. So as things come through, things like two big contracts are still a little bit up in the air.
Hmm.
There's a couple of other things that need to work.
Yeah. And also HR decisions. Okay.
Graham, unless you want to actually clarify what the wording was from the monitoring officer.
From where?
From the monitoring officer.
I see no reason, although the whole email correspondence is absolutely marked confidential, I see no reason. In fact, I think it would be positive to actually quote some of the wording from the head of legal's email.
Right, okay. The I think the key element was, as reported by the monitoring officer, was that there was no standards committee finding of a breach of the code of conduct by the parish councillors who were the subject of a complaint. Officers taking a decision, they inform the complainant and the councillors in question, but the decisions and the reasons for those decisions remain. So,
funny old business, that, isn't it?
I think that's where we are. The matter's completed. It is what it is. Nothing further to say.
Yeah.
Right. So the complaints procedure is based on the SLCC model. Have circulated, or it's been circulated, an additional procedure based on there's a number of parish councils that have issued supplementary procedures or expanded their complaints procedure to include what can be broadly described as unreasonable complaints. We are suggesting having a standalone so it doesn't confuse or conflict with the current complaints procedure circulated based on Covicott Parish Council. It clearly would need checking and potentially adapting for Ashwell Parish Council. But the suggestion is that we adopt that additional policy and bring it back to a January meeting to by which time we were drafted specific revisions to tailor them to. Comments, or is everyone happy with that?
Well, yeah, let's think about it. Yeah. I'm not entirely convinced at the moment, but it's something we can all think about. Yeah.
I don't think there's any harm in having an additional procedure in the hopefully very rare instances in which it might need to be reduced. At least it's there on the shelf and it can be used.
Yeah. I think that's one argument in favour, isn't it? Yeah.
And the wording of the code policy doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything in there that any reasonable person would disagree with.
So. Mm-hmm.
And as Chris said, it doesn't have to be used. Unless, there is sufficient evidence to bring it into play.
Can I just add? I have no idea. This is one I merely picked up. I googled some, to be honest. In line with your
previous thinking that you should always adopt a model policy from a recognised organisation. I can easily do some espionage to find out where this one came from. I suspect it's an MSLCC one. There may be other models available, but I can do a bit of research in between now, Jane, yeah, Rowland,
and I can
to find out. Yeah. Because I say, if you want to be consistent and adopt a model policy, we could make sure this is a model policy.
Yeah, this is just codicop, but I mean, if you do see something that is a standard policy,
I think this is one, but I think that which would
make the argument a bit stronger. Yeah.
Okay, everyone happy for this to be brought back in the January meeting on that basis? Thank you. In which case, we'll close the meeting at 9:12. The next meeting is later than usual, Wednesday the 17th of January at 7:00. And I'll adjourn to have our HR and the yearbook discussion. So don't pack your bags up just yet, Martin.
Don't get off that easy.
Close the meeting, stop recording. HR committee won't be long, don't mind. Not be late.
I've got to see my boy before he leaves this evening.